This is 69 the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. The goal on here is to make listeners aware of interesting companies, smart people, and new technology developments, all of them meaningful in making digital signage projects happen. I try to help listeners understand sometimes complicated subjects and why they should care. The podcasts are free and I try to get a new one out weekly, but things happen now and then. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 69 has been around since 2006, and the publication and podcast are now owned by Spectrio, which provides customer engagement solutions for business. You can find them at spectrio.com. When I asked an industry friend whose opinions I respect and trust quite a bit, what CMS software he'd looked at and been impressed by, he rattled off a few companies I was expecting him to say, but he also mentioned the platform developed and marketed by a smallish UK company called Now Signage. He'd seen a lot of different options, but these guys, he said, had something that was very modern and nimble. I finally got my act together and scheduled a chat with founder Nick Johnson. Now's roots are in pushing social media messaging to big screens at live events, like concerts and big games. Requests started evolving, both in terms of what could be done with screens and how long they'd been used, which led in part to him concluding the future business was in permanent installations and revenue that was recurring and predictable versus periodic. That led to the start of Now back in 2013. Now markets its product as being affordable and not focused on a particular market segment like QSR, workplace, or whatever. That generalist approach tends to worry me because buyer decisions tend to get focused on price, as in who costs the least. But in my chat with Johnson, he explains that their market focus is on what he calls multi-screen management, networks with a lot of locations and a lot of screens. Now, most companies would also say they want that and do that, but as Johnson explains in our chat, that's easy to talk about, but much harder to do well. Nick, thank you for joining me. I know Now Signage reasonably well. I suspect a lot of other people do as well, but could you maybe just give me a rundown on the background of the company, what it is you do, what's distinct, that sort of thing?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, cheers for having me on, Dave. And yeah, nice to be here. So Now Signage, for those that don't know who we are a UK-based business. We've been around since 2013 now. A lot of people thought we kind of launched to market and in a big kind of whirlwind storm at about 6 years ago, but actually the tech has been being developed since 2013 now, and then we really honed in on the permanent signage market around 7 or 8 years ago, really. Okay. In terms of Now Signage, the way we kind of position ourselves is that we're a multi-screen management platform that allows our users to effectively and efficiently manage large networks of screens. So with that, we don't really focus on a specific vertical specialism. So we're not a specific sector like a corporate sector outright or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Our specialism is really around meeting the needs and demands of projects that have multiple screens, so often in multiple locations or multiple sites. So those large volume projects is our specialism.
Now, I would imagine most software companies would say, you know, we can fully support large enterprise level, big footprint projects across multiple yeah. locations and all that. So that doesn't immediately hit me as a distinction, but I'm guessing you're going to tell me that it's easier said than done.
Exactly. Yeah. So normally, like you say, with CMSs, and we found it ourselves in the early days, we had an eye on those bigger projects. But in reality, as soon as it got above 50 screens, that becomes a challenge for a CMS. It's got a different thought process that needs to go into the CMS from an intuitive nature. But also your platform needs to be built to kind of balance those enterprise features alongside the simplicity, the flexibility and scalability of the platform. So yeah, there's some nuances there for sure, where if you are wanting to manage those large scale projects, you really need to nail the ability to make it as easy as possible for those end users to target specific screens with specific promotions or specific content. And that's quite a powerful and hard to achieve thing within a CMS. It's all about bringing those features to enable that functionality.
So if I'm an end user or even a reseller integrator looking at different options out there, what's my sniff test, my smell test to kind of sort out who actually can genuinely support large scale networks like that? Is it data integration? Is it elasticity at the server level? What are those things?
Yeah, both of those obviously come into consideration. I suggest it. The way we position our product is that we ultimately want it to be self-managed by the user. So if it can't be easy to be managed by the user, then you've got a problem. And to make it easy to be managed by the user, you do need those features in the platform, like very advanced targeted tags or roles and permissions for locking down areas of the platform. The targeted tags will be allowing people to target localized stores with localized messages based on the tagging functionality. And I'd probably say the most important thing is just giving that flexibility throughout the platform. You can't say that all scheduling has to be done in the scheduling area. You need to be more flexible than that. So in the Now Signage CMS, we enable certain degrees of different types of scheduling to happen, whether it's in the content area, the actual playlist area, the scheduling area, and even at the screens level. There's different types of tools that you can use to meet the requirements of the customer. So it's not always a one size fits all. You have to go to that customer and say, look, we've got this feature set here that make it easy to manage large networks. What's your specific requirement here? And we may turn around and go, great, you want to use our targeted tags and our override functionality. Or we might say you wanted to use nested playlists and the ability to set assets to show and remove at set dates and times. So it's giving that broader flexibility within the CMS to adapt to their needs.
I'm curious as well about the whole idea of affordability. It's one of the things that comes across on your site pretty quickly, that you talk about it being cost effective and affordable.
Yeah.
But it's also pretty sophisticated. Like a lot of the platforms that say they're affordable, it's because, they do the basics.
Yeah. And I'm glad you used the word affordable there, because I don't like the word cheap. So for us, it's not a race to the bottom. We're not about being the cheapest. We're about being what you get out of our package is the most affordable. It's the most cost effective. So you get the most amount of performance out of our platform for the cost ratio. So yeah, it's all about affordability. So with the platform, we don't charge for add-ons in the platform. Within the platform, when you get access to Now Signage, you get access to all our features and all our functionality. And you even get access to, as we roll out new features and functionality, they become free to use by all end users. So that's why we appeal, as I said at the start there, we don't really have a sector specialism. We focus on the type of customer that we want to work with. And then often those customers we find, because we operate, let's say, with lots of supermarkets, a supermarket isn't just a retail requirement in the front of store. A true requirement for a supermarket is actually they want to centralize their CMS, and they have a retail requirement. They have a retail media network requirement. They have a digital out-of-home requirement. They have a back-office requirement. They have a factory and manufacturing plant requirement. So all of these requirements are completely different. And the Now Signage platform allows those users to pull on different features and functionalities in the platform. So they may, in their manufacturing plant, use our Microsoft Power BI integration for showing dispatch information and fleet management, whereas in the retail media network, they might be using our proof of play functionality, which, as you've alluded to there, is very much an enterprise feature and is normally often doubles the cost of a license. We absorb all of those costs from our servers and so on, because we spread that across our whole customer base. So yeah, it's absolutely the most affordable is how we position ourselves, not the cheapest in the race to the bottom.
Yeah, I've often said that if you're going to be a generalist, that can be a little deadly, because you are just competing on price by and large. But what you're saying is, we go across a number of vertical sectors, but we're not really a generalist because our specialty is large multi-screen networks.
Yeah. And what you will get with those networks as well, because of the types of brands and customers that you're working with for those projects, it's not really about just selling features and competing on cost for those large mm-hmm. networks. Now, obviously, they will be price-driven because often they go out to tender. So you do need the ability to really come down on your price, which we have that capability to do. So we can be very competitive on price. But equally, what the brands want to see is they really want to build a partnership with that CMS to get confidence from you that you're advising them on how to structure their account to maximize the usage of your platform to meet their goals and of what they want to require with the network. So if you can communicate and instill that confidence with them, I think that's really where you find the winning edge to things.
Mm-hmm. You also, as a company, say that you're hardware agnostic.
Yeah.
I have seen all kinds of companies go down that path, and many of them then almost surrender and come up with their own dedicated player devices. And I don't think it's because they're making extra hardware margin. It's just that they grow wary of trying to support all these different types of hardware. And the much easier path is to just have their own, which they can control. It's known. They know the build, everything else. So how do you manage being agnostic across so many different platforms?
Yeah, so it's all about, as you say again there, it's about getting the feature parity across all those different operating systems. So that there are so many out there. You've got the standard kind of Android, Windows, Linux, all of those. But then you've got the more mm-hmm. proprietary ones with the system on chip, where a lot of them are using really an Android base there. But you've got Samsung yeah. with Tizen, LG with WebOS, Brightsign with their setup there. So, we've got one centralized code base, and so I probably can't share too much about that and give our full game away. But yeah, we've got one centralized code base which delivers feature parity across all those builds. So when we make a change within the platform, we don't need to make it for 7 different builds or 10 different builds. We don't have to support lots of builds of the platform, okay. meaning lots of developers. We have one centralized build, and that is built in a way that is then compatible with all operating systems out there. So you may have seen that on our standard ISC. At ISC, we had 3 or 4 Bluefin Brightsign displays. We had a large video wall that was powered by a Windows player. We had a Sony system on chip display and a Samsung system on chip display. And on one setup there, via the show Wi-Fi, which is very flaky at times,
yes.
we managed to achieve perfect screen synchronization across different hardwares again, which is quite unusual there. Not only are we offering the parity across the hardware, but actually with features like Screen Sync, we can bring all of that together and actually offer the synchronization to take into account those different processing powers and speeds and so on.
So does that mean if you inherit a network and you're then going to expand on it and it has multiple different operating systems on different devices and so on, you can manage them all off of your application without having something in the middle like a Synergy OS or whatever?
Absolutely. And I think that's what's so important with the types of customers that we're onboarding, is that they will have a network that's out there that's got legacy hardware and screens in there, and they're not in a position where they want a huge outlay of cost going transform all that hardware over to brand new hardware. So because we can sit on system on chip, we can sit on the media players, and we also work closely with those partners, like you've mentioned, Synergy OS. If there was a requirement there, then we could sit alongside that. But generally, because we have that feature parity and the hardware agnostic approach, there's no requirement for that additional layer that needs to be added. And so it can reduce all the costs and also mean that the network can be rolled out at relative ease and speed as well.
Some of the other software applications out there that say they are hardware agnostic, they're able to do that because it's a somewhat truncated application. It's a web player or something. So yes, you can get content on all the different operating systems or whatever, but it's not a pure player. It can't do everything that a native player could do.
Yeah. Yeah. So ours is a full application in the way that it's powered. So we are a Chrome OS partner, and we can run through a browser mode or any sort of environment like that where it needs to be embedded into a web page or as a browser player. But yeah, the way our code base packages up, it packages up everything as its own native application.
For over a decade, ScreenFeed has been the reliable choice for beautifully designed, licensed content such as news and weather. We handle over 27 million requests a day to deliver dynamic content to 200,000 screens across the globe. Now we bring you ScreenFeed Connect, a no-code solution that makes complex content projects easy. Projects that used to take our designers and developers weeks became a to-do we could complete before lunch. The easy-to-use browser-based tool leverages pre-built data connections and ready-made widgets to give you the power to design with data. Create team member profiles, schedules, tenant directories, progress boards, featured products, or anything that leverages your data. Discover how Connect empowers you to complete projects faster at screenfeed.com.
A few companies have started talking, they've been talking about a few things, but one of them is this idea of headless CMS and the idea that if I have a tool set that I'm already using within a larger company that's pushing out to web, mobile, intranet, extranet, whatever it may be, they want to use that tool set to also do digital signage as opposed to logging into a separate application. Can you do that sort of thing?
So are you referring to embedding us into different environments so that we could be played within an intranet environment?
Probably more so that the development and the scheduling, a lot of what you would do for a digital sign network, you could do within another application, and the digital signage platform is kind of the plumbing, the infrastructure that moves things around. It's kind of the way that Samsung with VXT now is positioning itself, is you can write your application on top of us or on top of our platform.
Yeah, so normally the way that we operate is that we have a fully open API. So we really want to be the source and the conduit for everything coming into it. So we won't go out there and build some specialist functionality that other platforms already build a lot better than us, like a Microsoft Power BI integration. Yeah. We wouldn't try and build something like that, or a Quividi integration that we've got if we're wanting to do audience measurement with camera systems and so on. Mm-hmm. We have an API there, so we can pull all of those great features and functionality together and then be the source to output that. Similar to in the QSR environment, things like with the API, we sit in harmony with their product system. So if they're wanting to do dynamic pricing, we will just be another outlay to them. They will be outputting to all the other different avenues for their pricing, and we will just be a different source that they're inputting into, and then we're then showcasing that dynamic pricing data onto the screen. So yeah, we've got an open API, and we're kind of pulling all that data resource into now signage.
And I would imagine the data side of things is super, super important, the ability to support all that.
Yeah. Well, from two angles, really. So from in terms of the data capacity, our side, we've just gone through a full year's process of improving and upgrading our infrastructure. So the infrastructure of a CMS is arguably what sets a lot of CMSs apart. You've found in recent years that there's certain CMSs that have raised to the top, and they're probably the ones that have invested in their infrastructure and their scalability as a brand and their security. So likewise, we've done the same. So our infrastructure is invaluable to the platform. If we have downtime or anything, that's going to impact our size of customers, which isn't then acceptable. But also the data that we can then pull together and aggregate to then analyze and give back to the customers inside the platform is obviously crucial as well. And that's probably going to be a big focus for us this year. We already have features like proof of play in the platform that can report on when, where, and how many times an advert is played on the screen. And all of that is live data that comes through. So customers don't need to wait for that data. Mm-hmm. And we obviously have lots of information about the kind of the status of the screens and the uptime status and the ability to kind of set them to go on and off and push our app updates and all of that kind of good stuff. But I think that will be a big push this year to analyze and help our customers understand that data more and more, knowing exactly where their screens are and what's happening with them.
Right. Your company is young enough in relative terms that I suspect you're not saddled with some of the problems that or challenges that really well-established companies may have in terms of they have a software application that's they've been building off of for 15, 20, even 30 years in some cases versus what you've got. If you started in 2013 and you kind of emerged a few years after that, you've got a platform that's using modern web tools and everything else, and you're a lot more malleable, I suspect.
Exactly. And a lot of the team that I brought together as well, we're all from a platform, a completely different sector, but before that created and delivered and brought to market a very successful SaaS business there in a completely different sector. So as I built this business, I've brought on a lot of the expertise from the old CTO from there, and our investor and my business partner is from that background as well. So right in our core, we understand how SaaS businesses and tech needs to work. So we're not from a hardware background. We're not interested in the hardware. We're interested in how can this software be the most efficient and scalable piece of software and also the most innovative piece of software. So you're right, probably the timing of it, in the sense that digital signage had kind of become to get a bit more established around that point and knew its place. So we don't have all the legacy burden of the hardware and having to build on and revamp our infrastructure. We've managed to build a very clean UI from day one, but also from the experience and background of myself, but also the people that are built around the team. We're really focused on SaaS and technology and innovation. That's what we live and breathe every day, really.
And the company kind of grew out of, or at least was inspired by, I believe it was pushing social media to screens at live events. Is that correct?
Yeah. So yeah, let's be honest. It was probably me just having a bit of fun in my mid 20s at that point. So the way it all founded is I was working for a company that was a web agency at that point, developing websites. So my part in that business was that we developed a piece of technology that was embedding social feeds into those websites. So at the time, just before 2013, I separated that as a separate company and thought, wouldn't it be great if we could get some social content onto screens at events? So this was kind of around the time that the Twitter walls were emerging. So it was right at the early stage of that. So our first ever event was actually at the Olympic Stadium, and we were powering the big screens where people were taking Instagram pictures and popping them onto big screens. And I couldn't really believe what I'd got into at that point. So I just enjoyed the ride for a few years. We got shipped around all over the world, doing large events. And as we did more of those events, I suppose the platform evolved, which is why the platform is so intuitive and focused just around the software, because we kind of started off with that base, and then we were doing events where people then wanted to advertise onto the screen. So we had to bring in some advertising capability to show images and videos. And then before we knew it, we started doing some more permanent setups where we needed to bring in that better structure and management. And then, as I say, probably around, I can't remember the exact date now, but it must have been around 7 or 8 years ago. Just overnight, it was 90% of our revenue at the time. I just decided we needed to focus on permanent signage. That was the model that is going to work. That's the sustainable model and the growth model that we wanted. So we kind of just made the ballsy move at that point that we were ditching all of that income, and we focused permanently on permanent digital signage. Yeah, because we had the background of the platform already, as I say, people were looking at us going, who are these guys who have come to market and we've just gone and won 4 AV awards in a row. But actually, it's because the software was there and we actually just needed to understand what a channel was and what the industry was. And that's what we focused on. And we don't sell direct at all. We only sell directly through our reseller channel, whether it's a balance of integrators or distributors. And that's how we now go to market. Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, I was talking about that with somebody else yesterday about the channel and the opportunities and challenges of doing that and how difficult it can be to sell direct if you also have channel partners. So you're kind of saying that you've got to choose door number one or door number two. You can't go through both.
Yeah, and I think it's a fine balance. And I'd say certainly absolutely where we come from, it's always through the channel. But I have seen some variances globally that some people say they're the channel in Europe, and then in the US they're selling direct because they get a big contract and the brand wants to work direct. So we've found in the US, we've actually just secured a very large project in the US, which is great news for us. But the relationship of that is that we engage directly. And we built the trust with the end user and we demonstrated our platform. But now it's come through to a commercial point. We are absolutely funneling that through the channel because that's how you build that trust and that relationship with the channel. And so that's now being commercially funneled through one of our channel partners. And then off the back of that, for us, there's no way that we would never do a direct deal because that kind of breaks our whole model as how we're going to market and how we're building trust with our resellers. They're ultimately our partner and our direct customer.
And are you white labeled and totally behind the curtain, or would the end user know that this is now signage as managed by Brand X?
In almost all circumstances, they will know it's now signage. What we don't do is we don't do white labels for our resellers. We want them to proudly shout about it being now signage. So everybody at the sales point knows that they are purchasing now signage. In some instances, once it then goes through the end user and they go, great, we're now using now signage, but actually we want our staff to log into an environment that feels familiar and friendly to them. At that point, we can white label for the end user. But at no point is it hidden that it's now signage. It's now signage all the way. And then when end users dive in, we can white label to an end user requirement.
Yeah, I've always wondered about white labeling. I understand the ask and everything, but if you do that as a reseller, there's then an expectation you really know your way around the software. And I suspect there's a lot of uncomfortable phone calls and meetings.
Yeah, and also I think you get that frustration as well with we've found fortunately that we've managed to secure some of those resellers who have traditionally sold a white labeled CMS, and the frustrations that they've actually ended up happening is that they get a demand from an end user to say, we need this feature and we need it right now. Now it's not their code base. They don't own the IP. They don't own the code. They've got no developers. So at that point they have to go back to the CMS and say, can you build this? But I think from a CMS's point of view, they're kind of like, well, you're a white label solution, so you now just need to join the queue of things. Whereas with us, we have that open dialogue with the end user and with our reseller. So if a request comes in, it funnels straight to us and we control that kind of destiny of where that feature's come in, and we're very transparent with that roadmap to react.
Right. ISE was a couple of months ago. You guys were there. When I was walking around, I was expecting to hear a lot more about AI from different software companies. Here's how we're using AI. Here's how we're applying it. Here's the opportunity and so on. But maybe it's just early stages and I just didn't hear much. I'm curious what you guys are doing with it or you're kind of sitting on the sidelines watching it.
We're absolutely not sitting on the sidelines watching it, but we're equally probably to have a go at us. We're not shouting about it as much as we probably should be. What we've found is that we are doing a huge amount of development in the backgrounds with AI. So we've already done some integrations into the platform with AI that haven't been released as full features into the platform. And I think my understanding, and I think what the feedback that I'm getting from other CMSs that we talk to and have good relationships with, is that AI at the moment is none of the big brands are quite ready to take the first step with it, really. And they're all very interested in it. And it's a great opportunity to open a door and start a conversation with them. So we do have AI features built into the platform that you can walk up to a screen and tell it what your allergies are, and it can then relay kind of what food is appropriate for you within that store, or help you find products within on certain aisles, or find your preferences. So we're using it as a tool to really open up the door and demonstrate. But in reality, there's not been a huge amount of adoption from it on our side. And I think that it will come, but I think some of the big brands are just waiting for someone to take the first step, see if it goes well, and then there'll be a lot of people to follow. But we're absolutely in that talking point where we've done a lot of AI development.
Yeah, I think, as you say, a lot of the work isn't really something that is going to be visible to an end user or to a channel partner. It's work that helps expedite, you know, some basic coding and things, right?
Yeah, it's all about bringing in the data and feeding that back to the end user in the cleanest and most efficient manner. So it can become a very powerful tool is where we're seeing it. As I say, that a great example would be that you can walk into a coffee shop and say, I want something for breakfast, but I've got a nut allergy, and it can relay all that allergen information and say, this is what we suggest. And no, I don't want anything that has meat in it. Okay, here's the vegan options. Mm-hmm. Great. Okay, where can I find that? You can find that on aisle 5. It's priced $4.99 or whatever it might be. All of that is just pulling live data and using the AI tool to relay that information.
Mm-hmm. Just going back to ISE, I can't have this conversation without asking about the Rolls-Royce.
Yeah, so we had a lot of interest and a lot of questions about why have you got a Rolls-Royce there, but
why not?
I think that's it, you know, Dave. But I think for me and now signage, we like to get noticed, and it's important to get noticed because it is at times a crowded marketplace, and I think you've really got to understand that there's a cost of being dull, and a lot of people waste a lot of energy and get drowned out by all this white noise because everyone's saying the same old saying, really.
Oh yeah.
So you've got to really consider what is the cost of being dull. And if you're going to be dull in the events industry, you're going to have an empty stand. You're going to have no pundits on your stand. You're going to be having no conversations. So it's all about, I think, making people care, making people smile, and surprising them in some way. And if you can hit those three points at any point in any form of marketing, I think you're getting interest and you're sparking debates, really.
So for people who did not go to ISE, what did you do?
So we bought a 1950s vintage Rolls-Royce from a scrap heap, and we did it up over 3 months. My business partner is a fanatic about cars, so
yes, I met him.
He did it as a bit of a hobby, and then once we've renovated it, to some Rolls-Royce lovers, they may have not been happy, but I remind them that it was on a scrap heap, so we did save it in the first place. That we chopped it in half, we attached a flatbed truck to it, we then constructed a digital scene on the back to make it look like it was like a food van, but actually it was constructed with screens, and the digital element created a visual effect to make it look like the screens went up and down. And then we drove it 1,300 miles from Manchester in the UK all the way to Barcelona at 50 miles an hour, parked it on the stand.
So was it on the back of another truck, or it was a viable rolling vehicle?
So with this setup, it was over 7 meters long, the unit. So and because of the age of it, we actually built an electric motor inside it underneath. So what we did is we transported it on another vehicle that had to drive very slowly. And then when we got it near to the venue, we actually drove it in with a remote control via the electric power. So we actually drove, because no petrol was allowed in the car, and we remote controlled it in and reversed it onto the stand. And then we had a few gags throughout the show as well, where we got people to sit in and then quickly removed the remote, and they thought that they'd pressed something and made the car move forward.
Well, that's certainly a lot more eye-grabbing than a bowl full of pens.
I agree.
So what are you going to do next year? Or you can't tell me.
I am under wraps on that one, but let's just say it's definitely going to be bigger and better. The problem that I think that once we do next year is I'm not too sure how we're then going to top it the following year. So next year is going to be, pretty impressive. It is vehicle related again. It's even more impressive. I'm quite looking forward to getting it over there.
Yeah. Well, the challenge of that is just what you just said. If you one up yourself every year, then there's an expectation. Now what are you going to do? Is it going to be a space shuttle or what?
Yeah, or just not turn up for a year or so. I don't think we can do that.
Nick, thank you. That was terrific.
Excellent. Well, thanks for having me on. And look forward to catching you in Infocom or wherever I see you next.
Infocom, I'll be at the event in Munich in 6-7 weeks, something like that.
So. Yeah, within Biddish, yeah.
I'm around.
Good stuff.
All right, take care. That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and maybe you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 69, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the archive and find hundreds of conversations with smart industry people. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 169 at 16-9.net. You'll find more than 8,000 posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. 169 is not a press release republishing mill like a lot of the stuff out there. If something makes it on 169, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 169 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and the key one here is ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. Check out all the curated and automated content available at ScreenFeed.com. 69, the blog, and the podcast are now owned by Spectrio, which does customer engagement solutions, most of that digital signage, for all kinds of businesses. You'll find them in the Tampa area and online at Spectrio. That's Spectrio.com. You'll find me working out of a sunny back room in my house located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.